Coming up on Harvard Chan This Week in Health, you may want to skip the bacon at breakfast, the new research linking processed meats to an increased risk of colorectal cancer. Plus, do people work better when they breathe easier? How green offices could increase worker productivity. And it's flu shot season. We'll explain how vaccines work and why they're critical for public health. Hello, and welcome to Harvard Chan This Week in Health. I'm Amy Montemiro.
And I'm Noah Levitt. And Amy, we'll begin this week with some tough news for all the bacon and the sausage lovers out there.
No, I gotta tell you, full disclosure, I'm a vegetarian, so I'm perhaps not as sad as some, but I can empathize. Dr. Eric Rim coming down on donuts last week, that did hit me hard.
All of this, though, in the interest of good health, healthier eating. And the big news that we're talking about is that the World Health Organization says that processed meats can lead to an increased risk of colorectal cancer. A report by the WHO's cancer research arm, the International Agency for Research on Cancer, found that 1.7 ounces of processed meat a day can increase a person's chance of developing colorectal cancer by 18%. So what is processed meat? Anything that has been cured, salted, smoked, or preserved in some way. In addition to bacon, that could be lunch meat or hot dogs. The WHO labeled unprocessed red meat, foods like beef, veal, or lamb, as possibly carcinogenic, citing limited evidence linking those foods with an increased cancer risk.
Noah, we've known for a while about the risks associated with processed meat. The American Cancer Society has been advising people to limit red and processed meat since 2002. And nutrition experts say that limit is the key word here. Speaking to the Boston Globe, Walter Willett, chair of the Department of Nutrition at the Harvard Chan School, said that people should think of processed meats or red meat as special event foods and eat them sparingly. Willett also recommends replacing those types of meat with vegetable sources of protein, such as nuts and legumes, as well as a moderate amount of poultry.
Also in the news this week, open enrollment for health insurance under the Affordable Care Act begins on Sunday, November 1st. And if you log on to healthcare.gov, you'll likely notice some changes. According to the Washington Post, the government has fine-tuned the enrollment website so it will be faster and will more clearly show all the expenses that someone considering a given health plan would have to pay. However, one new feature has been delayed. A new tool would have allowed Americans to search for health plans near them that include their doctors and cover their prescription drugs. No word on when that feature will launch. In all, people in 38 states will be using healthcare.gov to sign up for insurance. Think for a second. When are you most productive at work? When it's quiet? When you have a clear to-do list?
How about when the air is clean? A new study from the Harvard Chan School, Syracuse University, and SUNY Upstate Medical Center finds that green offices can have an effect on worker productivity. Researchers found that people who work in well-ventilated offices with below-average levels of indoor pollutants and carbon dioxide have significantly higher cognitive functioning scores than those who work in offices with typical levels.
Researchers studied 24 participants in a controlled environment, which allowed scientists to simulate a variety of environmental conditions. During the day, the participants performed normal work functions. At the end of the day, they each took cognitive assessments. Researchers saw the best improvement in three areas: crisis response, strategy, and information usage.
Lead author Joseph Allen of the Center for Health and the Global Environment at the Harvard Chan School says the study underscores the importance of indoor air quality, saying that even modest improvements can have a, quote, profound impact on the decision-making performance of workers.
When children who are obese cut back on their sugar intake, they see almost immediate health benefits. That's according to a new study published in the journal Obesity. The New York Times reports that researchers from the University of California, San Francisco, remove foods with added sugar from a group of children's diets and replace them with other types of carbohydrates so that the subject's weight and overall calorie intake remain roughly the same. Within 10 days, those children showed dramatic improvements in their blood pressure, cholesterol, and triglycerides. Over the same period, there was little change in the weight of the children. The researchers say this shows the effect that added sugars can have on health and suggests that all calories may not be equal.
A new study reported this week in the LA Times is giving us a much clearer picture of e-cigarette usage by adults in the United States. According to the Centers for Disease Control, just under 4% of Americans report regularly using e-cigs, compared to the 15% who smoke regular cigarettes. E-cigs do appear to be popular among current smokers. Nearly half of current smokers surveyed by the CDC said they had tried the battery-powered devices, and about 16% say they continue to use them. This could provide evidence that some smokers are turning to e-cigs in order to quit combustible cigarettes. But Vish Vishwanath, professor of health communications at the Harvard Chan School, says that more data is needed about how people are using e-cigarettes.
What we don't know is these people who are becoming dual users, so to speak, that is, whether they are continuing to smoke at the rate they are smoking, when they can smoke combustible cigarettes, but when they cannot smoke combustible cigarettes, they are resorting to e-cigarettes, in which case they are continuing to get the kind of a nicotine dose that they are looking for. The hypothesis to be tested is it a complementarity effect where they are complementing existing combustible smoking with e-cigarettes, or is it a substitution effect where they are substituting e-cigarettes for combustible cigarettes?
Another recent study from the Centers for Disease Control found that e-cigarette usage among middle and high school students in the U.S. tripled in 2014. It's estimated that 13% of high school students in the U.S. currently use e-cigs.
And Amy, we also had the chance to talk to Vishwanath about another important issue right now, flu vaccines. A study recently completed by his team finds that when communicating about the importance of vaccines, public health officials should not take a one-size-fits-all approach. The study, published in the journal Vaccines, looked at vaccine hesitancy during the 2009 H1N1 flu outbreak. Researchers found that those who refused to be vaccinated fell into three categories: disengaged skeptics, who are least likely to get vaccinated; the informed unconvinced, consumers of media who may have not received information convincing them to vaccinate; and those who are open to persuasion, people with high levels of concern about the flu, but who need more information to make a decision. Vishwanath says that understanding why people choose not to get vaccinated can help public health officials communicate more effectively.
If you take this open to persuasion cluster, most of them are Hispanic and Spanish-speaking, and most of the people are lower income. Since they are also interested in information, they also rely on healthcare professionals. So that's a very different strategy. So if you want to reach out to them, we don't have to convince them about the importance of vaccination as much as trying to provide accessible information in terms of where they can get vaccinated in a language that they can understand, which is different from the skeptics group, where you need to convince them that it is important to get vaccinated and that it is safe to get vaccinated.
Vishwanath says the U.S. largely dodged a bullet with the 2009 H1N1 outbreak, and says it's important to communicate the importance of vaccines now using well-designed and tailored strategies before the next pandemic strikes. Amy, last week you quizzed me about my breakfast habits, so this week I'm turning the tables. Have you had your flu shot yet?
No, I was in that third category where I needed a little extra persuasion, but working at the School of Public Health, they got me on Team Flu Shot, so I did. I went and got my flu shot last week. Thank you for asking.
A success story.
A success story. That's right. No, flu shots are different because your body's immune response from vaccination declines over time. Additionally, the flu virus can evolve quickly, so the vaccine is often updated to match these changes. But just to be clear, other vaccines do work differently. Take polio or the vaccine for the measles. These immunizations received as a child can potentially provide a lifetime of immunity from these other diseases. So how does a flu shot or any other vaccine actually prevent disease? Marie McCormick, professor in the Department of Social and Behavioral Sciences at the Harvard Chan School, explains.
Basically, the way vaccines work is they are trying to replicate a way that the body has for most efficiently fighting infection. And the way that is you get the infection, you develop these antibodies to the infection, then the body has a memory that anytime they encounter that same infection, these antibodies come out. So the strategy is to take a weakened version of the infecting agent so that the body can encounter it, overcome it, develop this memory response, and so that it's always available whenever you encounter that agent again. In the early 1900s, 10% of babies, 1 in 10, died before their first birthday, in large part because of the burden of infectious disease that they encountered. If you get enough people vaccinated in the order of 80-90%, then you have community protection. Because even if someone comes and brings the infectious disease in, there's nobody there to catch it and pass it on. So there is both an individual and a community value to the way that vaccines work. We've had an enormous decrease in the kinds of conditions that cause morbidity that are preventable by vaccines. And it is both an advantage to the individual to have a vaccine and an advantage to the community. We're now moving to other conditions, including preventing cancer. So it's moving in a direction that really prevents a lot of morbidity and mortality. So they're incredibly important and they're probably one of the most successful public health strategies that we have.
That was Marie McCormick on the importance of vaccinations. So if you haven't had your flu shot yet, be sure to get one, especially if you are at high risk for complications from the flu. This includes children younger than 5, adults 65 and older, pregnant women, and residents of nursing homes or long-term care facilities. As always, be sure to talk with your doctor or healthcare provider to determine what is best for you. And that's all for this episode of Harvard Chan This Week in Health, a production of the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health.
You can listen to this podcast at any time and stay up to date on the latest health news by visiting our website, hsph.harvard.edu.